Time for Flashback. Tracks from the past. Today, with a Scener interview.
Cyphoid is the power behind the Demoscene satellite that circles the parties. The one that makes sure they reach the audience. It's called SceneSat, and it's hard to imagine where we would be today without its capability to broadcast, archive, and present the output of the scene. Autumn of 2026 is soon here, and Cyphoid has a brand new site, application, and great plans for the SceneSat in the making. On the 18th of July 2026, he spoke with Corius and DJ Demon on the Edison demo party in Stockholm, Sweden. Let's go there now and hear the story.
Hey, DJ Demon.
Hello there.
We are back again. We didn't think we were going to do another interview, but actually we're lucky and we're going to do one.
One more for the road.
One more for the road. Here at the bar at Edison 2026 in Stockholm, Sweden, we have another tie to both the scene in organized or like a commentating fashion, and also in infrastructure way, I would say. Welcome to the bar, Cyphoid.
Yes, thank you. Good to be here.
Yeah, it's. We wanted to talk to you actually last year as well, but yeah. You're an elusive cat to get a hold of.
I mean, that's a big problem with having a party in my own hometown, because the family is always calling, and I can't blame on the fact that, hey, there's a party going on, but you're just half an hour away. So there are always stuff to do at home, and this is the bad side of being at a home party.
Yeah. Of course. We talked to D-Fox earlier, and let's jump into a bit of your connection to Revision.
Basically, I went to the final breakpoint in 2010.
Yeah,
that was my only breakpoint party I actually went to, and I got to know D-Fox. I had met him before as well, and when I heard that they were starting up a new party after Revision or after Breakpoint, I was like, yeah, we're discussing things, and since we did the video streaming or audio streaming actually at Breakpoint, they wanted us to do audio on Revision as well, and I was also voiceovering the scene.org awards already 2 years before that, so it kind of turned natural that I jumped into this, and I started off as a quite invested organizer in Revision. I did the website for the first couple of years as well, besides doing the audiobook commentary and broadcast.
Yeah.
And it kind of just been there since.
Yeah.
In that sense. I haven't attended that many Revisions, sadly, because of family duties and stuff, but when I go, it's really great.
I feel like every time I watch Revision, I've seen you, Truck, and what's that last guy?
Subby.
Yeah. The trio of commentators. It feels like coming home.
Yeah.
But what is your role when you go to Revision? Is it SceneSat, which we'll come to in a little while, or is it as a commentator? Because that's what I know you from.
I mean, to be honest, it's in the role of SceneSat in the sense of being a commentator.
Yeah.
That's true. I'm kind of, as here at this party as well, I'm a very lightweight organizer in the sense that I don't do the regular duty stuff. I basically provide the server side of things for SceneSat, for streaming and stuff like that, and everything around. And when it comes to Revision, for instance, I've always supplied the background music for non-audible competitions, like graphics competitions and stuff like that. So I've
had some background music.
Yeah, all the background music. Well, it's a curated list of tracks, and people seem to enjoy it because they kind of fit the mood and sort of that.
Yeah.
So I'm basically available for anything that is needed whenever it comes to streaming or whatever. So.
And talking about music, one of my first experiences with SceneSat is that it was a radio. I thought it was a radio, and that was about it. But wow, oh boy, how mistaken you can be. Tell us a bit about what is SceneSat and how you got started at. Like, how far back do we go?
Well, I bumped into the radio side of things in 2003, really. Mm-hmm. I went to Back in Time Live in Brighton. My friend Mahoney dragged me there. I got to meet all the original composers from the cover of 64, like Martin Galway, Rob Howard, David Whittaker, everyone was there at that point.
What year are we in then?
2003.
Yeah.
And then I got to know the people around Slay Radio, like Slaygon and the surrounding people. Yeah. Like we had Boz, we had a lot of people who were dealing with the Slay Radio and remixing side of things. Mm. And then I got to know them a bit more and just hovered around. And then in 2005, me and I jumped into one of the Slay Radio shows that was broadcast from Stockholm, the Fleming Show with Andreas Morpheus Wallström.
Yep.
And we kind of hit it off and started doing co-broadcasts at that point.
Yeah.
So early January 2006, I did my first own show on Slay Radio.
So you were a radio host, you're having your own like DJ
sort of like that. Sitting at home just doing a broadcast, it was good fun. It was a bit too fun because I had my kids, but I didn't have any other family then, so I had a lot of time to focus on this, which means I did a lot of shows in quite a short while. For about 2 years or something like that, I did 150 shows or something like that. So a lot of impromptu stuff whenever. Did some broadcasts from some parties and stuff. But then we kind of grew apart a bit in the fact that I didn't want to stick to Commodore 64 only. I wanted to stretch in the limits a bit more because the demo scene is so much more. And I mean, I have a heritage in the demo scene from the mid-80s. So I've been around for a while. And therefore, we kind of decided to separate and go apart. And basically the same night as that was decided, I started talking to some friends like Fnord, who helped build the infrastructure from Slay Radio once back in the days, as well as Hazel and Sir Garbage Truck. We kind of got together and said, let's do something. And Hazel had already done a sort of a demo scene radio for himself. Like he just wanted some demo scene music to be able to listen to wherever. Basically the same way that Slay Radio started once back in the 90s. So we kind of, after a week, we had a beta version up and running. And then we got started just building stuff. We broadcast from some parties in the year 2008.
But at this point, CNSAT is a radio, right?
It is a radio because of the simple fact that video streaming was horrible back then.
Yes.
I mean, the first shows we did for Slay Radio, as well as the first shows from CNSAT, when I was at home, was still like webcam, updating every 10 seconds. So there was no video streaming whatsoever.
This I remember. I actually did that during the 90s when I was broadcasting on Community Broadcaster in Stockholm. And it was like, 3 seconds, 10 seconds, still picture basically. Kind of cool to see a blurry vision of what may have been a human being.
We even have, I have a couple of shows recorded or stills recorded where we put disco lights and smoke machines for a webcam still to radio show. So there was some just weird stuff there. But then in 2009 we actually went live for real, and we did that with a bang, with a show casting our first Sound of Scenes compilation, because I know a lot of people in the demo scene and surrounding things for ages. So I got a bunch of artists who hadn't done stuff for ages and a bunch of actual demo scene artists as well. So we started off with a compilation and we felt like, oh, this could be a cool thing. And then we kind of just built on that. And video came a bit later when we got the bandwidth to broadcast video from parties in that sense. And then we got sort of more and more into it.
Mm.
And
So on the audio side, or let's say radio side, there's the Sound of CNSAT.
Yeah, that's basically just a compilation, and that we want to showcase music from the demo scene and its surroundings. So it's not sort of like, let's pick a track here and there, but showcase the actual musicians and the way they want to express themselves as well. So it's, I don't censor anything. Basically everything that has been submitted to a Sound of CNSAT has actually been released on a Sound of CNSAT, because even though there are some tracks on this now 7 compilations that I don't like, but that's my personal opinion.
That's fair.
And if that person wants to express that opinion, I'm not the one to stand in the way, because there are other people who like this as well. And it also shows the width. We have everything ranging from noise to orchestral to hardcore synth stuff to
everything
metal,
between.
Everything
yeah.
between. And it's like seven albums so far, and we have number 8 on its way now.
Great. I have bought quite a number of them, and they're all excellent. In terms of like, so there's no like curation process here. It is basically, as you said, everything that's submitted to SceneSat?
No. That's the distinction. Not everything that's submitted to SceneSat in itself, but this is for the compilations, and the compilations are basically
so you submit specifically for
yes, there. I built a site to manage to build these compilations,
okay.
basically. So it's a distinction between the sound of SceneSat and SceneSat
gotcha.
Itself.
Gotcha.
And we basically haven't added much tracks to the rotational of SceneSat because the website right now is a gazillion years old, and
yeah.
it's not really suitable for this. So I'm revamping the whole system right now.
Yeah.
So
let's talk about SceneSat as a video service or
yeah.
video hosting thing. When did that begin, and how has it evolved today?
I mean, we started off by actually getting donated server streaming usage from some sceners who had access to video streaming software or hardware even.
When was this?
This must be 13 years ago, I think. I think it was 2012, 2013.
Okay.
When Revision started to get going well as well.
Hmm.
So we had some donated server use capacity at that point in time. And then it kind of has grown from there. And thanks to our extremely excellent sponsor today, we have a quite beefy setup that I'm currently rebuilding everything into a more flexible structure. We used a commercial tool, or the server software itself was for free, but the API access that was needed to control it costed $135 a month.
Yeah.
I've replaced that now with a completely non-costly solution.
That's Ziphoid created, or?
Yes.
Yeah.
Not only Ziphoid, my friends Claude and Codex there, I know that you frown on the AI thing,
yeah.
but used correctly, it's amazing because of the simple fact that I'm basically the only one who's actively have some time to do stuff for SceneSat right now, because the rest of the staff are, well, family stuff.
Yeah, well, I totally understand. I mean,
yeah.
Because you're basically not wipe coding. You'd actually look at the code.
Yes.
You split
yeah.
it into tasks and tell it to
yeah,
do this,
course.
Instead
yeah.
of saying, do something, just
no,
it works,
no, no, no.
I'm happy. That's
no,
not.
No, no that's also the thing, and this is the beauty of actually having multiple ways of doing it. I can get them to code review themselves as well as I do the code reviewing and the architectural
oh, yeah.
side of things as well, because I've been doing this quite a while, and it's a sound architecture, and I could never have done this by myself without this.
So tell me a bit about how, like, these days, SceneSat is integral to the demo scene.
Oh,
if
I hope so.
it feels like that. It's like if there's a demo party going on, there's a high chance you can see a recording. We actually used the recording from SceneSat from Edison last
yeah.
year in order to create the Edison Day 1 and Day 2 video streams. Very
yeah.
very useful and lifesaver.
Yeah, but that's the thing. You have an archival status like no one can compete with. I mean, you are the definitive storage of everything ever done, basically.
We're trying to help out as much as possible. And I mean, the more parties that are actually going through our system, doesn't matter if they use our system in the long run, the better it is, because we store it without bleeping out commercial audio or whatever,
yeah.
inserting
it's the raw experience.
Yes, it's a real experience, and we can actually do whatever Restream.com does now. They send one stream, we can split it wherever they want to be, because we have some parties who want their presence only to be on Twitch, but they still go through us.
Mm.
That means that we can store it all,
yeah.
but still go there. And the idea of what I'm building right now is a sort of more self-serving way that can simplify broadcasting for the demo scene, for organizers of events and parties, not for single streamers, because that's that way they can use YouTube or whatever, but for the party side of things.
So I'm wondering, to me it feels like if there was a demo party either in the past or going on now, SceneSat is there. And
in some way. Yes.
And how is that process? In like, do they contact you, or are you there just like connecting the wires in order to save and store that video stream?
To put it like this, 10 years ago I was probably visiting 12 to 15 to 20 parties a year, me personally.
Yeah, went around.
Yeah, and which was crazy because it kind of broke my finances and my family life. So that's not doable anymore.
Yeah.
But the more that we can help self-serve, I do a lot of remote helping for parties as well. We have friends who do broadcast and do voiceovers as well. Truck is going to a lot of parties. We have other, like Sobi is going to other parties.
Yeah.
But we, I mean, there are some parties that come back year after year because they know our system works and they know when to ping me and or us.
But like, if I have a new demo party, there's a high chance that SceneSat is top of mind. And do they contact you then, or is it the other way?
Yeah, if they have something new that we don't know about, yes, they contact us. And I mean, most of the demo scene is quite small, but still a true network of things. So it's quite easy to reach out all branches, and people usually knows us in some way.
Yes.
And we're omnipotent in that sense. So we're basically everywhere.
But it feels like are they? Like there are demo parties next week or next month in all over Europe and stuff like that. It feels like I can rely on SceneSat to just show me what's going on, or I can watch it later.
Yeah, and I mean that's also the thing, and that this is also why I hate our website right now, because it's so completely not up to date. So I can't keep it up to date, which means that we need to rely on other sources like Demosu, like demoparty.net and Poet and stuff like that, which is great for an upcoming schedule. But this is about to change. I'm gonna open this up a bit, and there are quite a few. I mean, to be honest, in the demo scene, there are quite a few people who are doing a lot of the sort of integral parts of it that are connected back and forth, and I know most of them, so we should be able to actually do something well together, because it is such a small scene and we need to help out to reach more people and make it easier for people.
It has become an integral part of the demo scene. And like, just for instance, like, let's say there's next week there's a demo party somewhere, then they already, if it's an existing demo party, they already have a, let's say, a deal or a, like a, you know about it, or they know about you, so they kind of like,
yeah,
or do you put it in your calendar, like
no.
Okay.
I mean, I keep track of things, and if there are people who I know that have been broadcasting with us before, I can ping them. So it's about time now. Yeah, well, nothing has changed, because I mean, even though I have a new setup, they have basically the same credentials as always. So they basically just need to press play on their OBS stream and it's up and running. So it's kind of, it's a no-brainer. If you tomorrow start a new party, I can have that up and running for you in 5 minutes without a problem, and they have the access needed. But this is also something that I want new organizers to experience and know about a bit more. So we'll do. We need to do some more work around in this.
Yeah. You said well, in the beginning it was just you. Now you have more people.
No, not that. I mean, we're quite. I mean, we're about 20 people in staff at all.
Oh.
But people have their other ways of life, and it's not like we need to have this strict routine. I'm basically the only one who can be arsed to do something all the time, because it's my little baby in one sense.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I and this is an important distinction. SceneSat is not me, and I am not SceneSat, but I'm the one mainly driving SceneSat, because, well, it's sort of like I need this to be as good as I want it to be, because I just love helping out where I can. And I also understand that people have different versions of ways of life, and they bump into things that are unexpected, so of course they can't take part as much as possible.
Mm.
But they come back a couple of years later. It doesn't really matter. It's not like, oh, okay, you haven't done anything for a year, you're out. No. It's not like that.
To us, me, new DJ Demon, like, Sifoid is in many ways SceneSat to us, at least. It's like, is it a, even though you have more staff on board, like, is it a, Is it vulnerable in like you know most?
Yeah, if I would cease to exist, then I doubt that CNZ would exist in the same sense, which is also one way why I need to revamp this into something that can be maintainable.
Yeah.
Because right now it can't.
Right.
It's basically me and Fnord who has built the whole infrastructure architecture behind it all. And the hardware part is falling behind, which means that we need to renew this.
Yeah.
So therefore I'm not going to just say let's open source everything right now. That's not the case, but in the long run I don't want to be the sole caretaker of everything. I want to open it up, and this is also why I'm not building too much unique stuff, and I'm not locking myself into a new platform. It's going to be a modular platform that can be reusable. I mean, I've set up a new single sign-on structure because we needed it, and of course I could have used CNID to that, but the big problem is that I have like 10 services that I need logins for, and to create new 10 new solutions or applications on CNID is a mess. So therefore I have our own single sign-on solution, but CNID is a provider. So if you have a CNID, you can actually register on the CNZ ID as well.
Oh, so you jump.
Yeah, so it basically, it's connected but still separate if needed, because I don't want to, well, do too much saturation on the CNID bits, for instance.
Yeah, so people that already have a CNID, it's more or less seamless for them
to
jump on.
Yeah, it's going to be a single click, and then you're in, and the CNZ ID will give you access to the various resources that I'm building right now, like a new website, a new video streaming solution, a new audio streaming solution, apps for both Android and iOS, and tvOS and Apple, and Android TV as well. So the goal is to actually help making it easier to reach out.
What one thought here, it was this is the idea that you don't see yourself as Mr. CNZ, but you also acknowledge that you're the one person that's kind of everything kind of hinges on, so to speak. I've seen this in many others. Eric Cade is pretty much the same thing, and so is Slay Radio, and there's a very small like group of people keeping everything in operation. And I wonder, how do we think about this in like 20 years from now?
That's the big problem, because it really doesn't exist a proper solution for that. I mean, we have a lot of, looking at scene.org, for instance, that it has been an integral part of the demo scene for ages now, with the hosting and with CNID and stuff like that. We have people like Gargai, who is stepping out more and more because he has other parts of life. And we see already there are problems when someone steps out. Because it's not open enough. That's the big problem. We need to open up a bit more. People are a bit too protective of their
baby.
Their baby at some point, and that's where I don't. Yeah, and that's not where I want to be. I want to be a bit more open. But until we have a decent enough platform someone else can manage and understand, then it still needs to be sort of my baby.
Yeah. But I think there is a bit of a problem here, because first of all, I think we see the same problem.
Yeah.
But I think the biggest problem is it's very hard to get people to help you.
Yeah.
It's very, people that actually help out are worth going.
Yeah, yeah. And this is also the case, and this is why I employed Claude and Codex.
Yeah, yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
Because I have done so many tries when having another person help out with this or that. And then they have a starting point like, let's go. And then something else happens, and then they kind of run out of steam, and then I'm still there. And I haven't reached anywhere as possible. I have one example from, we created the Music Line Editor, which is an Amiga music program back in the 90s. I think that I had four people who wanted to take this into the next level on a new platform or update the Amiga version, and everything has failed. But now I have a working Music Line Editor on my Mac, thanks to Codex, actually. And it's fully backwards compatible. I've been disappointed so many times when people have said, no, I'm not going to be the one that quits. But then they have quit again. So it's sad but true, and I understand it, because this is a hobby. This is just something that we do for fun. There is definitely, incredible. An inverse version of money, because you're spending more money than you ever can
yeah,
earn.
This is so true.
I've sunk so much money into this.
Yeah,
it's amazing anyway that we're still alive.
How do you sponsor or finance this then?
Lately, thanks to the Sound of Scenesat compilations. We offer them for free completely, of course, but if you can and feel like it, you can purchase them or buy something on Bandcamp.
Yeah.
They are the biggest source of income, no doubt. We also have a Patreon that we're not active in the Patreon sense of things, like we're producing special things, but people are kind enough to support us there. And that's the only way that we survive, basically. And, of course, extremely generous hosting. We have Glesis, who's an ISP and a big service provider. They have been amazing. So we have quite a beefy setup, to be honest.
Yeah, that's my next question, actually. If you're able to talk a bit about the infrastructure around this thing that supports a big behemoth like this.
Looking at it like this, the whole old system is running on a machine that is way too old, that should have been thrown away for ages ago, which is why we really need it. And right now, actually, the boot SSDs of that machine is dead. So if that goes down, we will not be on air straight away. Then I need to reinvoke the new system. So we basically have two servers in a data center here in Stockholm, with each having a 10 gigabit dedicated uplink. Each server.
Okay.
And then we were running out of storage for the video archive. Right now it's like 7 terabytes or something like that. So, which is not much for a home computer thing, but for a server side, yeah, it's a lot. So we bought capacity at a data center in Helsinki, like $50 a month it turned into. So we mentioned that to our to Glesis, and there's I'll look what I can do. And then came back a couple of hours later, like, yeah, I found a JBOD, just a bunch of disks, 8 terabytes. If I put that in a server and give you a control machine, would that be okay? So yeah, now we have 80 terabytes of storage available straight away.
Like 10 times more.
Yeah, yeah, with an additional 10 gigabit uplink. So we have basically 30 gigabits of uplink, which means that theoretically, if we were to serve a 10 megabit stream out, we could do 3,000 viewers on our platform without a problem.
Yeah.
Which will never probably happen, because it's more on the bigger side of things. But the system is so flexible now, so we can reach out if there's a big party going on, let's say revision, for instance. We can shoot out edge relays to a DigitalOcean server and pay $25 for a week's worth of streaming, and then we have more bandwidth, so it's expandable now. But without the help of Glesis, we would not have made it, because they basically let us have this for free and say you need to use more bandwidth.
Luxury problem.
Sweet deal.
Yes, it is.
Wow,
it's amazing. That's the beauty of knowing people, because that's the only reason that we have it.
Yeah, I was about to say. Yeah. You're like you need connections and knowing people.
Yes.
How many this infrastructure? How many like viewers do you support every month, or like?
I mean, it completely depends on how many people who are. It depends on the events and the parties itself. Yeah. I mean, on an average day, when it comes to the radio in itself, we're around 30, 40, 50 listeners at any point in time, depending on the events. Now we're not doing that many radio shows anymore, sadly. We used to have a schedule. We now basically have one regular show per month, sadly.
Yeah.
But it's extremely hard to say, because, I mean, this party has been around 80 up to 100 viewers, and then half of them have been on Twitch, because people are
going
it's easy to get on Twitch, and this is also part of why building an app is quite good, to help making it easier, and the whole usability side of our site needs to be way improved, and that's what I'm building now. And with I plan to bring in your shows as well into our archive as a guest station, because basically in 2014 or no, even earlier in 2000, we started building it on 2008. I had the idea already on the Slay Radio time to build a sort of a replay, because the shows that we did then, live shows, very very highly interactive with the IRC primarily. Yeah. And when if you miss the show, you kind of miss half of the show because you didn't follow the chat.
Yeah.
So therefore, we built the first prototype was actually using Winamp and a sort of a karaoke playback routine to play back the text as a karaoke thing in Winamp to actually get the chat logs back.
Really?
Yeah. But then we built an app. We built a whole system called Relive. That was meant to be bigger than it turned into. So we had a bunch of stations. We have all the BitJam podcasts. We have there are some other stations in there. I plan to bring you guys in as a sort of a guest station as well, which means that you will end up in our archive as a guest station with all
great.
Your...
Great. That would be cool, yeah.
So it makes it easier because the new app and everything has downloadability and you can offline listen and everything like that. So.
What would Relive, Replay?
Relive.
Relive.
Yeah.
That also applies to video streams, right?
Well, in a sense. We haven't built... I didn't build it before, but now I will extend it now. So you will have replaying of chat logs as well, depending on video streams. But I mean, Relive, yes, you can do that with video as well, but not as easy. I mean, this was meant to be sort of streamlined. It was
just
efficient.
Stream, that's it.
It was, audio streaming, yeah. Because that was basically what we were starting out to be.
Yeah.
And then it kind of went stale, so I've been the only one updating them, even though there have been other producers of stuff.
Yeah.
So I'm automating this, which means that every time you release a new show, you can click on a button in our interface, or it will pull whenever you need it. So it'll be simple.
And you're mentioning there will be or there is a demo scene app?
No, it's not a demo scene app. It's actually a SceneSat app, and there will be.
Okay.
I plan to have it on test flight for iOS probably next week, and then an Android version is almost done as well.
So what can users expect when they fire up that app?
Basically a list of what's going on right now, and then I plan to embed the upcoming schedule. Not only of parties that we actually are broadcasting through, but I'll probably just link in demoparty.net or something like that. But it's aimed at simplicity and make it easy to consume. That's the whole idea.
One-stop shop to figure out if there's anything going on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when is it releasing then? Everybody is waiting.
Now, as I said, it depends. It also depends a bit on Google and Apple, of course. I'm still waiting to get my approved Google Play account. Apple, I'm already approved, but I just need to finalize some stuff. There are still some UI stuff that needs to be altered. And the big problem is as soon as you release something, you need to start supporting it as well, because people will start to find bugs. And this is why I'll probably invite some people to just try it out, because now it's only on my phones and my Apple TV at home as well.
We'd like to try it out, DJ Demon.
Yeah, absolutely.
Androiders or iPhones?
Android.
Yes.
Okay. I'll let you know when Google Play approves the test flight kind of style they have.
Yeah, count us in. That would be awesome.
Yeah. Because I need to add you as a provider as well. So. And how many shows do you have approximately?
Approximately between the thumb and the... what do you say? Two minute pack thing.
Yeah.
A little bit so. 163.
Oh, that's gorgeous. That's gorgeous. That is it. No, but I mean, as long as you have structured data, which you do have in the form of RSS, then it's not a problem to just... I will actually grab the actual audio data, so that will be served from our archive as well. So
that is good. I mean... Yeah. Go ahead, just scrape it.
Yeah.
It's open. If you want some other format to structured format, just say.
That's not a problem. I mean, as long as you have timestamps for play and track
lists
and stuff.
Full chapter
like that.
Support.
I know.
And transcript.
Yeah, that's good. Transcript might not make much sense as a chat log, though, so it's not that interesting in that sense.
No, but I'm telling you, pretty much everything podcasting 2.0 is supported.
Yeah, that's cool. That's cool.
Yeah.
I mean, I basically have all our SceneSat shows as an iTunes podcast as well, but I haven't really done anything more with it apart from chapters for each track. So it depends on it.
So you told us, I guess, like, what does the future for SceneSat hold? I guess it's...
Hopefully, world domination.
Yeah,
not really. Good. No, but I want to open stuff up a bit more because I want to make it easier for organizers, because we're all getting older. We need to reach out to more people and actually get them interested. Yeah. And I actually got a question yesterday from Magic demo scene pal, and he's like, give me 5 buzzwords why I should send a demo scene to scenesat.com. And I said, I shouldn't, because right now the site is just not understandable in any way. It's basically, I have a hard time to point a newbie to Poet, for instance, because that's not really the demo scene in that sense, because it depends. It depends on what you need to know what to expect when you go in there. But the idea is that it needs to be easier to consume. People need to understand what they're getting themselves into a bit more. So there need to be a lot more curation and a lot more surrounding information. So the goal is to make it easier to reach more people and have more sort of connected data, so that we don't have 5 different sources of one thing, and we don't know what's actually the correct one. So I'm all about facts and data in that sense, and it needs to be correct.
And making yourself making the system itself like less vulnerable or less reliable on one point of failure.
Exactly, that's the idea. I'm going to make myself redundant in the long run, because I probably can't go on that much longer. I'm 55 now, but yeah.
No, hopefully. I mean, for outsiders like us, Scenesat has always seemed massive, but kind of like slow moving.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And because it's very nice to hear that.
It's staffing, basically. Yeah, yeah. We have way too little people who can actually.
But it's good to hear that you are thinking about it actively, and there is a plan instead of stagnation.
There are so many things going on in the background, and also the front end is just the tip of the iceberg. There are so many more things behind the scenes to actually get everything working the way it does. Everything is interconnected in a different way now, and more flexible and expandable, which makes it easier to let it survive.
Yeah.
Yes, a question. How many songs do you have on your radio station?
About 8,000, something like that. And soon I'll get 2,000 SIDs fully recorded straight from the hardware as well. So, that will up it with 1,500 or something like that. So
that is not bad.
No.
Do you have a regular player, or is it just like a radio player stream thing as well? Like, can I just click and have Surprise Me song, or is it?
No. This is just a radio right now. Yeah. And also one thing that we've chosen to do is to not allow downloads of stuff unless you're logged in, or if we have the permit from the authors.
Yeah.
To have them downloadable, because some people want to keep their downloads available from their sources.
Yeah.
And everything like that, for instance. But we'll see what, I mean, a lot of the tracks are still out on scene.org or whatever, so it's freely downloadable. But one thing that we need to be better at is adding metadata, connecting where the sources are and everything like that. So there is a big work in the background already going on with that, so we're going to refine sources and everything like that. And some of the stuff that we have is not particularly demo scene related, in the sense of it can be sort of a net label win, which is sort of next door in the sense, because when we started out, there were a lot of those tracks on the rotational because of the fact that we had, it was similar. There could have been seniors who were involved in those net labels and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But we're not purely demo scene to every aspect, and that's also part of why it's quite a fresh take on things. But the new system allows me to basically spin up new channels for everything I want. So if I want an Amiga only channel, I can easily do that and just filter out the Amiga tracks and then set up. And now, for instance, I'm also adding now that all the video streams that go through us also automatically get an extracted audio stream. If you can't, for instance, watch video where, if you're driving or something like that, you can always click the audio stream of the same stream and hear it instead.
Yeah.
So and also integrating various party systems to have them send what's playing out, for instance, so that I can get that stream titled and everything like that. So it's opening up a lot of opportunities.
Since you have a lot of artists in your database, have some of them given you SceneSat exclusive license rights?
Yeah. But also I don't want the SceneSat exclusive rights in that sense, because the thing is that I have a lot of work in progress tracks that have been just made for us as well.
Yeah.
But I want... And this is also the thing with when we release something on the Sound of SceneSat, we prefer it to be unreleased, but we're also rounding some stuff up that have been at various parties. I know that a couple of tracks that was made here, Alpa's track, for instance, will be on the Sound of SceneSat Volume 8, because that's okay, because I want that to be spread. And after we have released that compilation, they're still their tracks. They can do whatever they want to with it, because I don't want to hold anything in. It's just
facilitator
and spread things, because this is the whole idea, because I want to show off how amazing musicians we have in the demo scene, and want them to be able to express them through us, and people are actually enjoying that quite well. So
are you planning on any feature to discover your content as well, since you have a lot of video, especially, well, obviously songs, but like videos and audio recordings, like just something like a surprise me or into something.
We already have that functionality in place, but just haven't implemented in the correct things. I mean, we for instance, we created, me and D-Fox created the Pounds Off a bunch of years ago, because we're all getting fat and decided to lose weight. So we built a Pounds Off site so that we could actually weight loss together. And D-Fox made a sort of a workout demo scene playlist from this out. Just surprise me, whatever. But we have similar things. We have some people around who has been making sort of demo players for that can automatically play both Commodore 64 and Amiga demo straight on your Mac, Windows machine, whatever, with an emulator, and also randomize that. So I'm planning to integrate more and more of these tools, because I don't need to reinvent everything, because there are people who are already building this, which is better to actually highlight them as well. But it's always interesting with a random cool production of the day or something like that. So there are possibilities, and the more that we connect the various sites, the more flexibility around that we can have.
The better.
Yeah.
You said you travel a lot, earlier around to various demo parties. Do you have any plans now for what's the next stop on Siphoid's?
Well, sadly, it's probably going to be Revision next year if I make it, because it's also a financial thing, of course, because with family and everything like that. I mean, the only reason why I made it this year was due to a fan who actually bought my trip there with everything. So he basically sponsored my whole trip, which was amazing.
Hats off to that.
Yes, he's great. The amazing, I can't count on that every year, of course, but I mean, it was especially wonderful for me, because we got to release our 40-year anniversary demo for Razor 1911 there as well.
That was amazing.
Oh, thank you. And it was really cool, especially since I've been a member since 1988. I was the first non-Norwegian member of Razor. Just seeing myself be the one name left on the member list when everything scrolls up is quite fun and still intimidating in a way. And when we got up to pick up the prizes, Dubmood said, and thanks to the elders, and pointed at me. So I can live with the fact that I'm one of the elders. So I'm completely okay with that.
Yeah.
But he also said that you need to come next year, because we plan to win a lot of Meteoric awards, so you need to help me carry it. Now, at least I hope we can get nominated at least. Shouldn't be a problem.
Yeah.
That's probably the next one, sadly.
Okay, we'll wrap things up here. But one thing, we ask people the origin of their handles. Is that something you want to mention, or skip it if you want?
It's a completely boring one, to be honest.
Okay.
Because when I started off in the demo scene, this was 1985. Yeah. Remember this? I can't really remember why, but there was something calling. So I call myself the survivor from the beginning. I don't know why. I have no clue why that came up to me. But then I realized when after going to my first demo party in 1987, I was like, no, I don't like this nickname. So this is not fun at all. So I basically took my pocket calculator back in the days. I brought the concise English dictionary. I made a randomizer, randomizing page number, column number, and row number, put out 10 examples and picked the best one. And it actually turned out to be Ziphoid with an X, which is a Ziphoid process, which is a physical thing in your ribs, basically, on your center of the... But an X felt a bit stumbly, so I was like, oh, let's make a Z instead. So it's a Ziphoid. That's basically it. So nothing. The interesting bit is people think that it comes from Sappho Beetlebrooks from Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy and stuff like that, but it's not.
But that would be an awesome reference.
Yeah, but there are so many Sappho already in the demo scene, so it's I'm quite unique, to be honest, which is good, because I haven't bumped into anyone who's calling themselves in any...
So basically now they think you've spelled it wrong.
Yes, which is
fine. Okay, good.
And also, an interesting thing, especially British people, they think it's pronounced Ziphoid in that sense, but I felt Ziphoid is clumsier than Ziphoid in a way, so I just felt I've kind of tuned it into Ziphoid, so some people have heard me enough so they know. that's how I pronounce it.
So it originates from a bodily function between the ribs or something?
Sort of like that. The Ziphoid process is part of your bone and breast and chest bones.
Yeah. All right, the prize giving ceremony is beginning behind us, so good timing. Yep. But in case you have, do you have a favorite tune? If not, that's fine.
Actually, no, I haven't found out to anyone because I have too many. Let's go Space Debris by Captain.
Space Debris by Captain. Okay,
good choice.
Yeah. Good choice.
Thank you for participating, and we're looking forward to the new app when it comes.
Yes. It will be there.
Thank you very much, Ziphoid. Thanks.
Thank you.
This has been an episode of Flashback Tracks from the Past. I'm DJ Demon, and co-host and the guy who interviewed Xiphoid, that will be Corius. Thank you very much for listening, and remember that you can go to ericade.radio and listen to the station and the podcast. This has been a part of a series called Voices of the Demo Scene. We hope to give you more interesting interviews in the future. Thank you for listening, and goodbye.
The Ericade Radio Network. Scene Sat is keeping it real.